Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Okay, so maybe I'm a little more excited than I've been over the last couple of weeks. And I'm just going to be talking from a sports perspective. Always great to be doing Lakers talk for Los Angeles, everybody that's tuning in on the ESPN app as well. So we'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. I'll get into the show. I'll get into Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes coming up at 7 o'clock. Of course, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about The Last Dance. I got a great question for Laker fans as well that I already threw up on Twitter, and we could talk about it in a little bit. But if I can start off with this, because I do feel like this was big-time news today for the world of sports, especially in the state of California. Governors from New York, California, and Texas said that professional sports could resume in their respective states in the near future. Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, could resume without fans as soon as the first week or so of June. Speaking at his daily news conference, Newsom said sports could return without spectators and with modification and very prescriptive conditions if the number of coronavirus cases and hospitalizations in the state continue to decrease. We know in LA they definitely have decreased. But I want to just start with that because I sent out this – I sent out a tweet. I think it was yesterday. And maybe it was Saturday. I just said that I have a new appreciation for sports. It's not just sports, just in general, right? I have a new appreciation for a lot of things. A new appreciation for what it was to just walk into a Starbucks and sit there for 2 hours and have my laptop and prep and have a cup of coffee and get to know all the people that are there, which I did routinely before pregame shows, obviously before Laker games, just kind of prepping on the show. Small little things that we took for granted all the time, just going to the grocery store, going out for a walk outside without having to throw a mask on. But one of the things that I've taken for granted my entire life, sports, and most definitely Lakers basketball. I have taken it for granted. I've taken it for granted because, never have I thought, and nobody has, that we'd be in a predicament like this where everything was just going to stop. All our lives were going to stop. So the governor's news today is big time news. I don't want to underplay that. My, thought process when I was coming into the show wasn't to talk about that until I heard. So for those that haven't got a chance to hear it, I do think this is big for LA and I think it's big for the state of California. And then maybe this is just more and more positive news that we'll get. Here's Governor Gavin Newsom in his press conference a little bit earlier today.
We are also looking forward in the next few weeks at a number of significant milestones that are worthy of highlighting. We expect if we hold the rate of transmissions, we hold the positivity rate down, we continue to do justice to the hospitalization and ICU numbers, that we'll be making announcements statewide, not just with the regional variances, that would allow for retail not just to be picked up, but in-store retail to be loosened up. In addition to that, sporting events, pro sports, in that first week or so of June without spectators and modifications and very prescriptive conditions also can begin to move forward. And a number of other sectors of our economy will open up again if we hold these trend lines in the next number of weeks.
All right. So at least for now, that's great news. Just unbelievable news. It's really great news. And I've said this since I think we started this whole quarantine, that once we got sports back, we would know that, okay, we have a handle on COVID-19. We have a handle on the coronavirus. We have more data. The health department and the state and the government thinks that, okay, you know what, we could take smaller steps. And granted, it won't be with fans, but that's a big step. That's a big step. And I know that means a lot to – listen, sports has always been this getaway. So sports has always been one of those things where it's our escape. And I know there's a lot of Laker fans that listen to this broadcast, obviously on Lakers Talk, and can share the same excitement that I have. Now, does it mean tomorrow Lakers basketball is going to be back? It doesn't mean that. Does it mean things can change in 2 weeks? Of course it can. But I think it also offers some light at the end of the tunnel. I think it does for those out there who are looking back at this Lakers season and what an unbelievable season it was. And by the way, even if you're not, that's okay. There's obviously been more things more important to worry about than just worrying about basketball. But at least from a fan perspective, from a basketball perspective, I do think this is big stuff. Okay, so as always, we'll keep everybody posted on that front. I got the Sliwa show the rest of the week, so Tuesday through Friday, we're going to be talking a lot about this, and I'm sure we'll find guests on that what this specifically means to the Dodgers, what it means to the Lakers, what it means to Major League Baseball, and what it means to the NBA. So we'll do that. Okay, so this is the one thing I wanted to start also with the show, and to give everybody just kind of my thought process as we end The Last Dance. What a great 5 weeks of content. What an unbelievable way to go back and look at the NBA, over 20 years ago, over 30 years ago at times, when they were dating back to Jordan's early, early career, and how that Chicago Bulls dynasty was growing, and obviously growing around Michael Jordan. What a beautiful, beautiful way to see the NBA in this five-week program, 10 episodes, each 1 hour. And it gave us a chance and a conversation as best as we can to talk about something and to look forward to something from a sports perspective. Yes, I could watch some of these old games, but I'm not looking forward to them the way I was looking forward to that documentary. It's great to talk Lakers basketball, or it's great to talk about what could be happening in sports. But the one thing we got over the last 5 weeks, we knew that every Sunday night here in LA, starting at 6 o'clock and going till 8, we got prime time journalism for 2 hours, and we got to look back on these unbelievable stories. And I'll get into some of these specific stories in just a second. But we got to look back at some of these unbelievable stories, whether it's the ups and downs of Scottie Pippen in his career, whether it's Michael Jordan. And I didn't know. I always thought it was a flu game. I guess it was a stomach flu or a food poisoning game, which we were unaware of yesterday. Somebody want to explain to me how somebody knows where Michael Jordan's room is, how five pizza guys are coming to his room. Funch, I don't know what I'm missing on that one, but I got to go back.
You knew something had to be up. If five guys are coming to your room to deliver a pizza.
We're talking about Michael Jordan here. I mean, I don't need to. We're talking about the greatest athlete potentially in the history of sports.
And he didn't give a fake name.
You know what room he's in? Well, first of all, you know what room he's in? Or how about the hotel just standing downstairs saying, cool, you're delivering pizza? Awesome. What room? Why don't you put it right here? We're going to have one of our guys go up there and take it to him. I mean, I've got a lot on the pizza stuff, but we'll do it a little bit later in the show. I don't want to use all my ammo on the pizza story. The Jordan addicted to winning. I mentioned this to Mason, Jerry Reinsdorf, how that wasn't more of a theme. The one individual that could have had control of giving the Chicago Bulls a chance to continue that dynasty, but it stopped because the Bulls chose to stop it. That storyline is obviously another one. Phil and his unique leadership style. All the role players. I mean, how amazing was it to hear stories about Steve Kerr and John Paxson? And they spent time on these role players that never get the proper we'll never obviously get a story, but because this is all intertwined with Michael Jordan, because they hit big time shots, you heard conversations about these players. I loved all of it. I absolutely, absolutely loved all of it. But the story I think that stuck out to me the most, it's this Reinsdorf stuff. It's the finger pointing at Jerry Krause when really at the end of the day, who writes the checks? The checks are always going to be written by Jerry Reinsdorf. And the thing that I think was unfortunate in that time period was the Chicago Bulls never got to be beat by another team. Maybe that's what makes that dynasty so special. But I want to make sure I clarify what I mean by that. The Lakers eventually lost in that Showtime era. Magic lost in the finals 4 times. Granted, he won 5. They went to 9 NBA championships, but the dynasty ended because another team took the championship from them. The Pistons took the championship from the Lakers in 2005. I know the Lakers lost the year prior to the San Antonio Spurs, but the Lakers finally lost. Ireland was mentioning a little bit earlier, the Mavs swept the Lakers in 2011. The Kobe Paul Gasol, that ended. Think of every era, whether it's the Boston Celtics, they have some losses. Whether it's the Detroit Pistons in the bad boy area, they got some losses. How about the Golden State Warriors? Think about how amazing the Golden State Warriors have been over the last 7 years. They've lost twice in the NBA Finals. The point that I'm making is to have a front office end your dynasty, and Michael Jordan telling Michael Wilbon that it still sticks in him that they're 6-0. Like it wasn't fulfilling because another team didn't rip it from them. They just stopped in 1998. That always, I think, is the one that sticks with me more than anything else. That's the one that I think of the most in this entire documentary. And as amazing as it was, do I know? And I'm going to play some sound a little bit later, and I could put that question out to folks that are listening. If they think the Bulls would have won their seventh NBA championship, we could have that conversation. But the fact that they weren't even given that opportunity for their seventh, that to me is a story in itself. Okay, I put this tweet out a little bit earlier. So I want to ask Laker fans out there, if there was a documentary made, all right, and it was on the Los Angeles Lakers, would you rather see a series on the Lakers Showtime era or on the Shaq Kobe days? So if there's a series, a documentary that highlights one of those two eras for the Lakers, the Showtime era or the Shaq and Kobe days, you can hit me 877-710-ESPN or feel free to send me a tweet at Alan Sleewood. I know I got a lot of tweets on this. I sent out the tweet a few hours ago, but you can also call in. We'll do that coming up next. Jamal Wilkes coming up at 7 o'clock. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710-ESPN. All right, insurance lawyers at the Wallace Firm understand that your restaurant or retail business has been forced by the government to shut down. Now your insurance is denying your business interruption claim based on a virus exclusion. And the truth is that your losses are from the forced closure, not a virus at your business. Your insurance company may have written your policy, but they don't get to decide the law. With so much on the line here, you have the right to let a judge decide if your insurance must pay. It's an incredibly important time right now if you're a business owner. And if all of this, the last 8 weeks, has been incredibly confusing for you, maybe I can help. Maybe the Wallace Firm can help. The only thing I could do is obviously just read off some of the information here that the Wallace Firm has for 710 ESPN listeners. Get a free policy review to find out if you are owed money for lost profits and operating expenses. I'll give you guys the phone number. If you're a business owner, this applies to you and you want more information, call the Wallace Firm. Brad Wallace, my guy, 844-844-WINS, 844-844-WINS, or visit wallacewins.com for a free policy review to find out if you are owed money for lost profits and operating expenses, the Wallace Firm. Got excited when I saw that tweet earlier. Not going to lie. Definitely got excited. Why wouldn't I? You know, for those who are just tuning in right now, I mentioned that Governor Gavin Newsom said could resume without fans as soon as the first week or so of June. He's talking about sports here in California. New York and Texas said that professional sports could resume in their respective states in the near future. So that part of it is definitely exciting. I do want to go back to this. So if ESPN did another 10-part documentary, or let's just say it's not 10 parts. Let's just say it's it's an extended version. It's one of these big-time versions, and it's on the Los Angeles Lakers, and we got to pick which era. Would you rather see it cover the Showtime era, or would you rather see it cover the Kobe and Shaq Lakers? I'm going to compare both eras real quick. Jamal Wilkes, by the way, coming up at 7 o'clock. Hall of Famer Jamal Silk Wilkes coming up at 7 o'clock. I'm going to compare both of these eras, and I have a preference. I know I want to see one over the other, and it's nothing against one of the eras. But just to kind of go back down memory lane, the Showtime era was an amazing time of Lakers basketball. Arguably the best time in Lakers basketball. Unfortunately, I was too young to where I couldn't appreciate it the way many other Laker fans did get a chance to appreciate it. But fast break basketball, run and gun style, Dr. Jerry Buss buys the team in 1979. Lakers start winning in 1980 and never turn back. Some of the greats to ever play the game, Magic and Kareem, James Worthy, Kurt Rambis, A.C. Green. Go up and down the line, up and down the list. Byron Scott, Michael Cooper, Michael Thompson, Jamal Wilkes, Pat Riley is the coach, the Laker girls, the Great Western Forum. I can just sit here for 30 minutes talking about all the highlights of that Showtime era. But I'm going to tell you why Kobe and Shaq era. I would love to see that era in some type of a 10-part series, 5-part series. I don't even care how they do it. But I'd love to see some type of extended documentary of the Shaq and Kobe days. First of all, that was my era. As in, that's when I was watching the most basketball in my life. That's when I was loving watching basketball. You know, I got a chance to catch a lot of the Lakers losing in the 90s. But then when they started winning, you know, it changed everything. And it wasn't just overnight that they just, boom, they won. No, they were losing to the Utah Jazz. Kobe was throwing up those air balls against the Jazz. Lakers were slowly starting to build. And then eventually when Phil Jackson came, there was a lot of up and downs with that Lakers team. There was that Game 7 moment against the Portland Trailblazers where if the Lakers lose in that series, who knows what kind of happens for the future of the Lakers? Who knows what happens if Kobe and Shaq end up winning championships together? I'm sure they would have. But I thought that was a special era. I really do. Because there was this lead up to finally getting to a championship. It was the two best players in the NBA or the best duo in the NBA, and it wasn't even close. It was Shaq, the most dominating player, who was known as not having anywhere the work ethic as Kobe Bryant did. It was Kobe, this young player that was just trying to come, the up-and-coming Kobe Bryant in the NBA that thought, okay, Shaq's the man right now. I know he's winning these MVPs. I know he's winning the finals MVPs, but I will have my turn at some point. And then it's three championships in a row, and then eventually it's the downfall of the Shaq and Kobe era, and eventually Shaq gets traded to the Miami Heat. That to me is more fascinating, and I say it's more fascinating because I feel like there's been a lot of – because that Showtime era was so popular, I feel like I know enough about that Showtime era. I feel like that Magic and the Kareem and the Pat Riley and the matchups against the Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons, I feel like those iconic moments, I feel like I've seen them. And that's not to say we haven't seen plenty of Shaq and Kobe moments. But that era to me for the Lakers, I'd be more curious to see today than I would be the Showtime era. And not everybody agrees. I mean, I'm looking on Twitter right now, at ABC Always Be Closing, by the way, arguably one of the greatest Twitter handles right there. Showtime, this is a no-brainer for those who actually saw the team in action. They basically played in the WWF era, not the WWE basketball we see today, at Champagne Nuts. He put them on there. At Ernie Martinez SD says Showtime. Let's see. Lamar Waters says, not fair. Showtime if I have to pick. So there's definitely some Showtime people in there. But then I start going down the list. Jesus Gomez, Jay Gomez at 3Z says Shaq and Kobe. Brian Flores has Shaq and Kobe. I want to find one. Here's won't say the rest of it. We'll just call it PTI. Better idea. Do similar last dance for Lakers, but timeline is 2000 to 2010. Centered around Phil Jackson. You get Shaq and Kobe. Kobe without Shaq. Phil's return after the book. Kobe Powell and beating Boston. Who better than Phil to discuss 2000 to 2004 with Shaq? Kobe's 81, Orlando, both finals versus Boston. That's actually a very, very good tweet. Funch, I know you said you got a call there. You got update me here. I went on a rant there.
We got a call from JP and Pico Rivera.
Okay, JP, you're on Lakers Talk. Go ahead, JP.
Hey, I would definitely go with the Showtime, man. I mean, the Kobe and Shaq, that was my era as well. So I feel like I saw every single game. But I got two words for you, Alan. Mm-hmm. Forum Club. Dr. Jerry Buss, baby. I mean, I would love to know everything that happened. You know,
I love that's what swung me. I love that's the one. Not any of the other stuff. This guy came before in club. JP, I appreciate the call, man. Thank you, man.
I'm with JP, too. I want to know about the club.
You know, once Funches, I knew once you heard that, I knew you were going to get swung here pretty quick, too. Come on, JP. Guy comes with a foreign club. A lot of tweets, by the way. Shaq and Kobe days. Actually, rather see one about the Kobe-led Lakers. That's Assad Weaver. Osvaldo Mongo. Kobe versus Shaq, please. I'd love to see, you know, these journalists, man, and these 30 for 30 specials that they do, just amazing. I mean, just amazing how good these are. It really is. Just the journalism that goes into it, the directors, the writers, the producers, everybody that's a part of it. And with all that said, it'd be amazing to see something around the Los Angeles Lakers. It'd be amazing to see something around Shaq and Kobe under very tough circumstances, too, obviously. Okay, the great Jamal Wilkes, Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes is coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. I mean, why wouldn't they be? If we get basketball back, definitely the Lakers will be the favorite. No reason why they wouldn't be the favorite. No reason why they shouldn't be the favorite. A little bit later in the show, I'll talk about on Friday where Dwight Howard addressed some of the local media, did a Zoom call. And one of the questions I specifically asked him was, what are going to be some of the challenges for the Lakers, or what would be the biggest challenge for the Lakers if the season does come back? And he mentioned chemistry, and I think what he meant by that was just the mere fact that the Lakers were rolling, right? They were in this position where they were, as LeBron put it, they were rounding third, just getting ready to come back to the playoffs. But I think that chemistry that he's referring to there is also going to be a huge benefit for the Lakers, because a lot of other teams, I don't know if they had that connection off the floor and the connection on the floor. And I thought the Lakers had that. I think that part to me was one of the strengths that the Lakers had this season. How many times if they lost a game, there was a good chance that they were smart enough. There were enough veterans on the team to kind of turn the page and say, okay, let's not worry about that game that we just lost. It's over. That's championship quality basketball. Or another good example, Lakers would walk into a road game against, you know, tough teams, tough environments, and they'd handle business. I remember that run that they had. This was in December at Denver, at Utah, when the schedule first came out in the summer. That was the road trip early on where you're like, well, man, you come out with a split in that one. That's big time. I think Lakers won at Denver by 9, and then they beat Utah by like 24 on the road or something along those lines. So from a championship perspective, if we get the season back and the Lakers do have that opportunity to finish out the rest of this year, no question about it, Lakers would be the favorites, and they should be the favorites. No reason why they wouldn't be. So one of the things that I mentioned, I know I was mentioning here as we got the show started, if there's one thing that I walk away from that Last Dance, and there's plenty of things to walk away from, but then not getting a chance to finish your not letting the dynasty end because another team took it from you, I got a feeling that's still a tough pill to swallow for Mike. I mean, watching that documentary and the end of it where Reinsdorf was saying, and Ramota had an article about this where they were kind of trying that Hail Mary attempt during the lockout season. Okay, well, let me see if I could convince Phil. That's what Reinsdorf was saying in the article. And, of course, great work by Ramona, as always. So when I look at that situation or that time back in 1998, isn't it just astonishing to you? I mean, isn't it just crazy? Can you imagine a Lakers team? And don't get me wrong, I know the Lakers were balling out even in 2005 when they lost to the Pistons. They were good enough to make it to the NBA Finals. But they were having a lot of internal issues. And it seemed like those issues were Shaq and Kobe. That either one was going to stay and the other one was going to have to go. That these guys had been playing together for 8 years. They had 3 NBA championships. They got to the finals 4 out of 8 years. They were making it to the NBA Finals 50% of the time that they were there together. But that ended because another team beat them. Actually, two teams beat them. The Spurs beat them in 2004, and then you had the Pistons beat them in 2005. So that naturally ended. It ended because they were no longer the best team. And they were having, you know, obviously their own internal issues. That Chicago Bulls team, impossible for all those players and even Phil to look back at that time and say to themselves, damn, what it could have been. Could we have, I don't know if that came off the right way, what it could have been. But looking back at that and saying, could we have won a seventh championship? Could we have won four in a row? I feel like, I mean, part of me feels like, and I know Pippen was trying to go get his money. I understand it. The guy was underpaid for years. I understand that Dennis Rodman was pretty much at the end of his career. I think John mentioned he only played 30-plus games. I think I heard it was like 50 games or something like that, that he played the rest of his career. So he obviously wasn't a young player that was going to be around for a number of years. That certainly wasn't the case. But you start kind of adding all this up, and you start adding if the Chicago Bulls had a chance to win seven. Did the Chicago Bulls, if they came back, would they have that opportunity to win seven? I want to play something from Tim Legler, who – actually, let me play Jordan first. So Jordan on The Last Dance of if he believed that the team had a chance to get number seven. Here's Jordan yesterday on The Last Dance.
We could have won seven. I really believe that. We may not have, but, man, just not to be able to try, that's something that – you know, I just can't accept, for whatever reason, I just can't accept it.
I don't blame him. And I remember yesterday hearing that. And the moment I heard it, the first thing that went to my mind was, yeah, I mean, you want somebody to take it from you. You don't want your front office to say, nope, we're good. By the way, what am I missing here when I hear that, where they want to rebuild? I mean, talk about Jerry Krause. Talk about how much... The guy built an unbelievable dynasty, and he deserves an incredible amount of credit. He really does. I mean, Jerry Krause traded for Scottie Pippen in the draft. Remember, Pippen was drafted by the Sonics. Jerry Krause put Phil Jackson as head coach when he was assistant. Jerry Krause brought Dennis Rodman to the Chicago Bulls. The only player Jerry Krause had nothing to do with was Michael Jordan. That's the only player. But Jordan was selected number 3-2, and I don't want to say that fell on the laps of the Chicago Bulls, but Sam Bowie went second. Hakeem Olajuwon went first. So it was because Portland didn't take Michael Jordan. He deserves a lot of credit, but damn, I mean, how insecure can you be that you want to end this thing simply because you think in your mind, oh, no, we can rebuild this. You can rebuild what? There's nothing to rebuild. Your house is built. The foundation is there. Ride this thing out until the wheels fall off. By the way, if you don't do that, then you rebuild for 20 plus years, which is what the Chicago Bulls have been doing. Okay, let's play Tim Legler on GetUp on if he thinks the Chicago Bulls. Actually, I'm sorry. We are going to we're going to cut away for a very, very important man. I can't tell you how appreciative I am to have Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes joining Lakers Talk. Jamal, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Alan. Staying safe and well. How about yourself?
Doing good. It's great to connect with you. I'm always always enjoy our time when we get a chance to have a conversation. Has it been – maybe you can kind of walk us through how has your day-to-day been? I'm imagining obviously spending a lot of time at home, but how have you been spending your time?
Well, it's been different for me as it has for most people. I get up in the morning, I read, I meditate, I walk, 2.5-3 miles every day. And now lately I'm reading more. I'm talking to a lot of family these days and old friends and watching as many movies as I can, Alan.
Well, when we have, a great like yourself and a Hall of Famer, I'm curious – can you shed some light on some of the books that you're reading? I know there's some wisdom there that we can all learn from. So if you have any books, any recommendations, we'd love to hear.
Well, no, not really recommendations. I just finished reading something about the Dalai Lama. I don't know why it was just sitting around, and I can't think of any other books off the top of my head, but.
I always ask that question because I'm sure, you have Yeah, just an incredible routine. And I know in a time like this where we're not able to do those the regular things that we have been doing, I'm curious to hear what your day-to-day is like. So that's good to know. So meditation, some reading. Jamal, so I wanted to – one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring you on the show tonight, and of course there's a number of different things that we can talk about, but I want to go down memory lane for a second. There was an article on Friday – LZ Granderson, who's co-hosts our morning show, but also does some work with the LA Times. He had an article about the start of the Showtime era and how that Showtime era started. And as we're talking about The Last Dance with the Chicago Bulls and this documentary, this 10-part series that obviously everybody enjoyed over the last 5 weeks, LZ went back, and I think this weekend was the anniversary of that Game 6 in Philadelphia, where really you can make that argument that that Showtime era started. So I want to reminisce a little bit. Of course, you know, a lot of the conversation is about Magic Johnson. It's about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But I just want to get your thoughts. After Game 5, when the Los Angeles Lakers are facing the Philadelphia 76ers, and you guys find out, you personally, when you find out Kareem's not going to be playing in Game 6, what's the first thing that goes through your mind?
Well, you know, dread. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be in the finals, playing against a great 76er team and not have all your horses, you know, not have everyone healthy. And, you know, he certainly got us there, or what was a big reason why we were there. You know, you just, when you first hear it, you know, you just don't want to hear it. And it's hard, you know, going to bed that night. We flew out the next day, so we had a night to kind of digest it, you know, which helped. And then, you know, the next day comes and the sun rises, also rises, you know, the next day. And so it's a new day. And then you start to think differently about it. You know, it wasn't a game seven. It was game six. Everyone expected us to lose. We really had nothing to lose. And then we started, you know, talking amongst each other and realizes that, you know, we played stretches without Kareem before and was much faster. We thought, you know, we could play real fast. And, you know, if we shot the ball well and defended well and rebounded well, that was a key, that you know, we might be okay. Now, realistically, did I expect to win game six before we left L.A.? Not really, but you know, Alan. I mean, you don't go on the floor unless you think you could win. But no, I didn't really have an expectation we would end it and win game six. You know, till the next day we got on the flight and started getting loosey goosey and so forth and so on, Alan.
The Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes joining Lakers talk. We're talking about that 1980 game lead up, at least to game six. So. Jamal, can you take me through it? Because there's a lot of stories about Magic on that plane trying to kind of turn the tide here. And like you just mentioned, I think one of the things that this happens in sports all the time, right, where you have nothing to lose. Nobody's expecting the Lakers to walk into Philly. There's no Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Nobody's expecting you to win that game. There is a lot of pressure on the Philadelphia 76ers. So maybe that was mentally helpful because – it wasn't all on – it was expected – the pressure was on the shoulders of the Sixers, not on the Lakers. But what was Magic like on that plane? What was the role that he was trying to have?
Well, I would say he was giddy, you know, as we all kind of were. You know, he and Norm Nixon and Michael Cooper, I mean, you know, they were really giddy, quite giddy. And you know, we were, you know, in a good mood. I mean, we were making jokes. I mean, we were going back, building our nerves back on the plane. By the time we landed, you know, we were ready to go for it, Alan.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those moments too where you get into Philadelphia, you got nothing to lose. Can you walk me through a little bit of the game when tip off starts and Magic suits up at center? Jamal, you had an incredible game in game six as well. When did the game, you know, in the flow of the game, when did you start believing like, wait a minute here, we may we may win here. Like, when did that confidence level start churning where you were talking about the pace was going to be different? You guys felt, okay, well, if we don't have Kareem, then maybe a counter to this is speed up the game. When did you start feeling that you guys had a chance to grab that game six?
Well, you know, first of all, at the shoot around that morning, and you know, Coach Westhead, who never wavered, you know, he said, well, who's going to jump center? And then, you know, when it kind of looks around, Magic says, well, I will, you know. So that's kind of how the morning started. But going into that game, you know, Alan, I was thinking, and I think we were thinking, if we could just stay in the game the first half, you know, that was the big question for us. And so, we played like there was an emergency situation, which it was, because you don't want to, you know, a game seven is great for the fans and even for the players. But as a player, you really want to avoid game seven, if at all possible, because it's just anything can happen. You know, it becomes like March Madness, sudden death. And so, we knew if we lost that game that there would be a game seven in L.A. Now, we didn't know if Kareem would be available. And frankly, as bad as his ankle looked, I had written him off for the series. Mm-hmm. I never asked him if he thought he could play or not, but he really sprained his back. But at halftime, we were up. You know, we were up 4 points. And then at the third quarter, at the top of the third quarter, and, you know, I was hitting a lot of big shots, and
you were feeling good, Jamal.
I was feeling good, man, and Magic had an incredible game, but we also got contributions, big contributions from, you know, Jim Jones and Norm Nixon and Cooper and Landsberg and Holland guys, Brad Holland, Marty Burns guys who didn't play much, you know, had really big moments for us in that game. But it was the top of the third quarter, and you could kind of see, you know, that they were winded. I don't think they expected we would play that fast. And then, you know, as the went to the fourth quarter, I mean, we didn't know we had won it, of course not, but we thought we had a good chance to win it, and so we just stayed the course.
Jamal, where's that game rank for you? I mean, there's always conversation, and rightfully so. Magic was just 20 years old, 42, 15, and 7. I think had three steals that game. Like you mentioned, suited up at center. You had 37 points and 10 rebounds that game. In a game six clincher to win an NBA championship for the Los Angeles Lakers, where does that, just from a personal perspective, under the circumstances, where does that game rank for you?
It's right at the top of the list. I can't say it's the best, but it's right there. I mean, just the drama around the game and you know, the first championship for the Lakers of that Showtime beginning, it ranks right at the top, Alan.
Hall of Famer, the great Jamal Wilkes, joining Lakers Talk. Jamal, did you get a chance to watch all 10 episodes of The Last Dance?
I did, yes.
What was your takeaway? Are there a couple things that stand out to you? Maybe favorite moments, maybe things that you didn't know walking in that, you know, you learned something about. What stood out to you?
Well, you know, first of all, I mean, the planning of it, it's obvious that, you know, they knew it was going to be the last dance, or the likelihood that it would be. And so therefore, everyone from the production crew to everyone, you know, got some great sound bites and you know, great stuff. I guess, you know, I didn't realize, you know, the general manager's role, Jerry Reinsdorf, and the turmoil around that, it was with Scottie Pippen and Tony Kukoc, but mainly, you know, Reinsdorf and just the turmoil around him. I found it interesting that, you know, oftentimes it takes tensions like that to bring out the best of a team or for an organization. And what really stood out to me was that it was just never-ending drama off the court, it seemed like it, but that's usually how it goes.
All right, final question, and again, greatly appreciate you taking the time, Jamal. But do you think, as we kind of look at that Chicago Bulls team in 1998, that's it. They win their sixth NBA championship. They never get a chance to nobody ever rips the championship away from them. Do you think if they came back in 1999, we would be talking about the Chicago Bulls going 7-0 in the NBA Finals in that Jordan era? Or do you think the way it ended and it felt like from a timing perspective that, no, that was the right time for it to end?
Well, you know, I mean, no one knows for sure. I mean, I feel like it was the right time to end. They made it clear it was the coach's last year, Phil Jackson's last year. Michael said he's only going to play for Phil. And then all the other issues going on, it seemed unlikely that, you know, they would be able to, you know, work through the egos and the tensions and pull it all together again. It seemed like it was hard enough to do it for the last year, you know, for the last dance.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jamal, thank you. And by the way, big thank you to Lizzo Wayne as well. She's great to help and set up this interview. And I know you two have a great relationship. So thank you for you and thank you to her for helping set this up. All right, bud?
Okay, buddy. Thanks, Alan.
Okay. Thank you. That's a Hall of Famer right there, Jamal Wilkes. Let's do this when we come back. So this has been one of the conversations that has gone around all day today. Would the Bulls have won their seventh title if they all came back? And Tim Legler was on Get Up a little bit earlier today, so I do want to address that because I was leading towards that, and then we finally obviously got the chance to connect with Jamal. So let's do that. Coming up at 7:30, Om Young Masuk from ESPN. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. Insurance lawyers at the Wallace Firm understand that your restaurant or retail business has been forced by the government to shut down. Now your insurance is denying your business interruption claim based on a virus exclusion. If this applies to you, call the Wallace Firm. 844-844-WINS. The Wallace Firm, proud partner of Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
All right, thank you to Hall of Famer Jamal Wilkes. Would the Bulls have won seven championships if they came back? Still don't understand how they didn't come back. I know everybody has their own reasons. Oh, but Alan, because of this, and Pippen would have had that, and what about this? You've won six championships in 8 years. The only time you didn't win was when Michael Jordan retired. You've won now three championships in a row. You can't figure out a way. Can you imagine if you're a Laker fan out there? And let's just use as an example. Maybe this is a bad example, but no, it's a perfect example. Shaq and Kobe win three championships in a row. And you're not going to go try and win your fourth? I mean, that I know the circumstances were different. I know Kobe was young. I know it's not apples to apples. But just in your mind, can you think that, you know, you're a dynasty that isn't getting that opportunity to win four championships in a row in their seventh title in 9 years? Tim Legler on Get Up explaining if he thinks the team would have had if they would have been good enough to win their seventh title.
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think there's a mitigating factor that would have really helped them be able to do that. Obviously, at the end of any run, there's going to be fatigue that sets in. There's just mental exhaustion as well as physical. And that's why typically these things break up or interpersonal relationships cancel it out, whatever it may be. But think about what happened that following summer leading into the next season. You had the lockout. And the lockout basically would have given this team additional time to rest mentally, physically. You would have come back for a shorter season. And if anybody ever needed a shorter season, it's a team that would be going for their fourth straight title. And that's exactly what would have been the remedy. Now, look, San Antonio obviously won the championship in 99, and they were a great team. But the Knicks were a surprise finalist that year in the finals. So I think the path to a seventh certainly was there. And that would have been in place, which would have been exactly what they would have needed to make that happen. A shorter season, more motivation in a shorter period of time, and a lot of rest in the offseason from winning that third straight title.
All right, 877-710-ESPN if you want to comment on this. If you think the Bulls would have won their seventh championship, their fourth championship in a row. you know, we can go down the list of what other teams were doing. We can go down the list of up-and-coming teams. We can go down the list of the San Antonio Spurs and the Rockets. And what about the New York Knicks, Indiana Pacers? We could do that. And Utah Jazz. We can do that. And I understand why, you know, people want to do that. I think the reality to me is this. You just want to see them lose on their own. You don't want their front office to be the difference of it. One of the biggest challenges, and I think we saw this with the Lakers as well after the Kobe and Shaq days, is it's tough internally. How many times did you hear in this documentary where they say they were exhausted? You know, that after Jordan won his third in a row, he just wanted to get away from the game. He was exhausted. He was done. He needed a break. And it sounds like, too, the way Phil set up the Last Dance, it was similar. I mean, before the season started, he titled it. He called it The Last Dance. He thought this was the last time this team was ever going to get back together. And it's beautiful the way Phil Jackson did a lot of his, just the thought process that he had in mind, the way he approached the game, his Zen mentality, all that stuff was beautiful, but you felt like Phil knew it was the end. Before any other team I thought would have beat the Chicago Bulls, part of me also thinks just not disinterest, but if they could do it all over again, if they had the motivation to do it all over again. We know Michael did. We know a lot of those players, you know, definitely had that motivation, but I'm sure it is draining every single year. One of the things that happened throughout this documentary, it was Jordan trying to find ways to get under his own skin. I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. I really mean it. Whether yesterday was Byron Russell, right, where Russell saw him as a rookie and said, hey, why'd you retire? I would have D'd your you-know-what up. And then there were other times. It was Clyde Drexler was a target. Danny Ainge was a target. Dan Majerle was a target. He found if he can find an angle to motivate himself, he was motivating himself. Ramona Shelburne was on the Hoop Collective podcast, and she's talking about Reinsdorf almost got the group back together after the 98 finals.
I think what everybody wants to know from Reinsdorf, like, did this really have to be the last dance? Could you have done anything different to change things? Could you have fired Jerry? Could you have stepped in? Could you have gotten Phil and Krause to back on the same page? Could you have paid Scottie Pippen? And he tried. He actually did. He went to Michael Jordan after the season and said, hey, Michael, you know, we've done this before. This is three in a row. I know what the team wants to defend the title. Everybody's a year older. I know this felt like the last dance and all that, but don't give me your answer right now. We're at the beginning of the lockout. Let me work on Phil. I don't know how long this is going to last. It could be months. It ended up being all the way into the next year. And let me just see if I can get Phil. And Michael said, okay, you know what? If you can get Phil, I'm in.
All right. That's Ramona Shelburne right there. I want to play one more from Ramona because if the plan was try to get Phil, here's Ramona talking specifically about Phil Jackson on the Hoop Collective podcast.
Phil had just gotten to this place mentally where he just said it was time. It's not necessarily me and Krause or can we coexist or anything like that. I think Phil just felt like it really had run its course, like too much blood had been spilled and they had already had all these goodbyes and everybody had, you know, kind of made their peace with it. Plus, he knew that Krause wanted to turn over the team. Like there was a lot of free agents that were going to move on. And Phil has this great part in 11 Rings where he talks about one of the Buddhist teachings of like, you know, I know that you can only really transform yourself when you really truly let go. And, you know, you have to just subject yourself to total annihilation over and over and over in order to evolve. And Phil had gotten his head in that place. I think Phil was also really tired. So by the time Reinsdorf came to Phil towards the end of the lockout, Phil was just, you know, there was a no go.
Fascinating. The whole thing is fascinating, especially Phil's part. And I know for Laker fans, we appreciate the Phil portion of this more than anything else. All right, let's do this when we come back. We'll continue this conversation on The Last Dance. I'll get Om Yongmasuk from ESPN to join the show. He's got an article right now on ESPN.com. Along for the ride, three stories from the end of the Bulls bench. So we'll get a kind of an in-depth look at that. And I'll get his thoughts on Governor Newsom's announcement today that sports could resume without fans as soon as the first week or so of June. Om Yongmasuk coming up next. Thank you for tuning in. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
All right. Very happy to have a new partner to the show, VSLiquor.com. VSLiquor.com. So here on the website right now, if you're wine you're looking for, there's certain types of liquor that you're looking for, bourbon, gin, rum, scotch, whiskey. There, by the way, a ton of different beer as well. This is how easy it is. If you don't want to get out to the grocery store, you don't want to go to 7-Eleven, you don't want to go, you just don't want to leave your place for things that aren't the necessities, VSLiquor.com. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Just go on the site, pick the liquor you're looking for, and VS Liquor will ship it straight to your door. Avoid those unnecessary trips outside your place. Alcohol delivered to your door. It's that easy. By the way, if you do go to VSLiquor.com, once you get to checkout, type in the code SPORTS, and you'll get 15% off your initial order, VSLiquor.com. I appreciate you guys tuning into Lakers Talk. Om Youngmasuk from ESPN joining the show. Om, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Alan? How you doing?
Long time no talk, man. How are things going in your life? And actually, you know, the first thing, and just because this came out just recently, but what were your thoughts on Governor Newsom with that news today that sports could resume without fans as soon as the first week or so of June?
Well, certainly, I think it's been a while since you and I talked. I remember, I think we talked like back in March, shortly after the season got suspended, and we were talking about, you know, how obsessed I had been with coronavirus since the beginning, and I was telling everybody to wash their hands and be careful and everything, mm-hmm. and now we're still here in May, and I got to tell you, I'll be honest with you, for a long time, I wasn't very optimistic about the season beginning, and I think largely it was because of, you know, that we didn't have enough testing, would we have a vaccine, which we probably won't, and also what happens if someone gets sick, even if you put everybody into like a bubble type of situation. But certainly now I think, you know, maybe what I've come to grips with and things are moving in a more optimistic direction is if someone does get sick, perhaps the NBA will still, they will have enough testing to know when that person is sick to be able to get that person out of the picture and away from everybody else and infecting everybody else. And maybe the new NBA might be one of these situations where we look at, you know, if someone does catch coronavirus, they're out for 2 weeks and it's like an injury situation, which is just crazy to think about and crazy to say. But I think in the last week or so, my level of optimism has gone up a little bit, even though I still think we are far from, as a country, being out in the clear and everybody being safe. I think having more testing coming around in the near future, and then the ability to eventually perhaps have more antibodies and vaccines and things like that will certainly help. But it looks like the NBA is going to do everything it can to come back and try to do it as safe as possible.
Yeah, I don't know if the news today about, you know, California, it's just good news, period, right? Just to think that, okay, well, there's obviously some optimism between the state or in the state. There's optimism in New York, in Texas. Those are the three states I talked about potentially getting sports back, of course, with no fans. I don't know how that news specifically affects the NBA, because it does sound like the NBA, and you could give your thoughts on this. You think the NBA would do something like we've mentioned before, where everybody is in one city rather, where in baseball they might play in some of their home parks, which the news today could have more of an effect on Major League Baseball than it would on the NBA?
I mean, I obviously can't look into the crystal ball, but I've always felt that if the NBA were to come back and finish the season and have a playoffs, they would have to do it in a situation where it would be a campus situation or a bubble situation. I personally like the idea of doing it in Orlando at Walt Disney World. If you've ever been to Walt Disney World, it is a humongous piece of property. I mean, it's big enough where you feel like you're not going to be able to have people get to the players or come in. And also, all the teams that you would have there, you can actually keep them apart from each other, because that's how sprawled out the place is. Whereas I think if you were to do it in Las Vegas, and I'm sure if they did go that route, they still would be able to keep teams safe and everything, but you feel like, hey, if you're in a hotel, employees, whether it's people making your food or the people who are cleaning your room, could sneak out and come back in and be around somebody else. Whereas in Disney, it's so sprawled out and it's private property that you feel like it would be a little bit safer if you went that route.
All right, so let's hope Om Young Wasak joining Lakers talk. Let's hope that, you know, this is obviously something that keeps progressing, and maybe in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we'll continue to get more information. And I know for sports fans out there and just the country in general, it would just show that, okay, we're definitely moving in the right direction. We'll see what happens on the NBA front. Couple last dance questions for you. First of all, you have an article right now in or on ESPN.com, Along for the Ride, three stories from the end of the Bulls bench. For those who haven't got a chance to read it, can you give us just a little bit of idea of what players that you had a chance to connect with and what is some of that conversation, those stories?
Yeah, I got to catch up with Scott Burrell, Bill Wennington, and Dickie Simpkins, and all three were obviously part of those championship teams toward the end. And Scott Burrell obviously became a focal point. A lot of the shows, just the verbal abuse he took from Michael Jordan day in and day out. And Scott Burrell, to his credit, one of the nicest guys till this day, does not take anything personally of what Michael Jordan used to do to him. And this was like a daily barrage and assault. I mean, he gave me a story where he said he remembered the first practice of training camp. He walked into the locker room and he said, wow, this is real. Michael Jordan's over there. Here we go. And because he had been traded from the Warriors for Dickie Simpkins about a month before camp started. And Jordan, as they were stretching, says to him, hey, Scott Burrell, you thought that your life would be a lot better being traded here because you didn't have to guard me. But guess what? You have to guard me every day now. And from that point on, it was a season-long onslaught, basically, of Jordan just berating and getting on Scott Burrell. And of course, this was Jordan's tactic to build Scott Burrell up, to make sure that he would be ready if called upon come playoff time. And it's a tactic that probably, you know, Scott Burrell and I talked about this today. In today's generation, Scott Burrell is a head coach now at Southern Connecticut State University. And you can't take that tactic anymore with youngsters of today's generation because you would probably be accused of, you know, mental harassment, verbal harassment. So it's interesting how much he had to go through. But he was just telling me stories of just what it was like to be with the Bulls. He said it was like traveling with the Beatles and Beyonce and Jay-Z all in one. Bill Wennington told this one story about how they went into the movie theaters on Thanksgiving Day in Utah, and they went to see Casino. This was back in, like, I think 1995. And Casino opened, and nobody was in the theater. They were surprised, and they loved it. But when they came out, the theater was packed. And then they were walking back to their hotel, and they noticed that the entire theater had left and joined them and walked back to their hotel with them. These are, like, many of the stories that a lot of these guys got to experience, that it's a once-in-a-lifetime, all-time dynasty team that these guys were able to kind of have a front-row seat to watch.
What did you think, you know, when you got a chance to watch the documentary and you saw the style of Jordan's leadership towards guys like Scott Burrell, or the story about Steve Kerr, when, you know, obviously he tells that story, what did you think of his style, his leadership? Because there's different ways to lead. That was obviously the way Michael Jordan led, and you can't, you know, what are you going to say? He's 6-0 in the NBA Finals. But when you look at it today and you said that, okay, that probably wouldn't fly in today's NBA, what do you think of that, just that leadership style?
Well, it was ruthless. And you, only in my mind, only one guy can get away with that, and that's Michael Jordan, because he was the greatest of all time, and he could back up his talk. And to him, it was his way of trying to, you know, every day he had to push himself, and he wanted to push everybody else around him. And Scott Burrell said he was always trying to get everybody to his level. And everybody knew nobody could get to Michael Jordan's level, which is pretty much darn near perfection. But Michael tried to get you to that level. And whatever that was, however, how many spots you had to jump to even come close, whatever your capacity was to reach that limit, the top, Michael Jordan was going to get you there. And then he felt that if he did that, that was how the team would be best prepared. Look, even today, you look at today's game, a lot of people wonder about LeBron James and how he leads. And, you know, some teammates love playing with him. Some teammates might not. You know, certainly LeBron will give you a glare if you do something wrong. Just ask J.R. Smith. It was nowhere near what Michael Jordan used to do, though. Michael Jordan used to do that all the time. But at the same time, Michael Jordan backed it up. And I think that's why you can't really get away. It's such an old school mentality. Today, the way Michael Jordan led back then, today it would just be called bullying. And that's what Scott Burrell and I talked about.
Young Masuk joining Lakers Talk. When you look at the way the Bulls dynasty ended, how it ended, and it's very different, right? I mean, most dynasties end, most championships end because another team beats, that champion, and then eventually it kind of fizzles out. For the Bulls, it was different. They were 6-0 in the finals. Obviously, they had won 3 championships in a row. When you walk away after that 10-part series, are you pointing a finger somewhere, or are you just kind of appreciating what we got to see, and either appreciate what we got to see over this 10-part series or even appreciate what we saw back in the 90s?
Well, I think growing up in that era, and certainly I was a Bulls fan growing up, and I'm talking about in the late 80s and early 90s, I certainly had respect for Jerry Krause and the way he built that team. He's the guy that discovered Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant. He was the guy that made the Charles Oakley trade. I hated that trade when the Bulls traded Oakley for Bill Cartwright, but certainly it was a move that helped them win their first 3 championships. I didn't like when he drafted B.J. Armstrong. I actually thought they should have drafted Sherman Douglas coming out of college because I thought Sherman Douglas was a better point guard. But you know what? B.J. Armstrong was a better fit and a better shooter. These are things that Jerry Krause was great at. But Jerry Krause, I agree with Steve Kerr, could not get out of his own way a lot of times. That ego was there, that he wanted the credit, and also was always looking to build the team and keep winning in his vision. And I feel like when you have an all-time dynasty, I mean, you won 3 championships in a row. To me, you don't break it up. If a player leaves, like in today's era, players leave via free agency, okay, fine. But for the organization to break it up, even if they had an abundance of evidence looking forward, saying that Dennis Rodman was already running out of gas, Scottie Pippen, his body was breaking down, he wanted more money, we couldn't pay Steve Kerr, we couldn't pay Judd Bushler, I still feel that if you had the opportunity to bring back that team, you do it and you defend your title until you can't defend it anymore. And remember, the following season, that was actually my first season covering the NBA was 97-98. The next season after that, there was a lockout. So then the season was 50 games. And the New York Knicks, that was a team that I was covering, went to the NBA Finals as the number 8 seed in the East. Patrick Ewing had gotten hurt. He wrecked his wrist. And the Knicks just kind of caught fire. Dan Allen, Houston, Latrell Sprewell caught fire. They end up getting to the finals, and they lose to a young Tim Duncan and an aging David Robinson. I say all this to say that had they brought the Bulls back, I feel like even if Michael Jordan had sliced his finger as he did with a cigar cutter, perhaps Michael might not have been able to play. But knowing Michael and how he was, and if they brought back that team, you got to like the chances that if the Bulls are in the playoffs, they're going to make it out of the Eastern Conference, especially in that shortened type of season.
Oh, my. I mentioned this a couple times, even before, by the way, before I even watched the documentary. Scottie Pippen was one of my favorite players and just love that there was nothing that he can't do. He accepted his role, no question about it. I think he's underrated, even though he, gets the respect he should deserve, but just because he was behind Michael Jordan. When you walk away from this 10-part series, do you feel like you have a much better understanding of Scottie Pippen, or you already knew he was the man that he was and he was as unbelievable as he was, a gamer like he was, and somebody that was underpaid for most of his career?
Actually, it's kind of the opposite for me because I always grew up knowing how versatile Scottie Pippen was, and at that time he was such a different player. To see a forward who was 6'8", but could handle like a point guard, could play different positions, could defend different positions, and was always kind of like that team player who always kind of did what was asked of him, and certainly got knocked a lot. His reputation took a big hit with the Tony Kukoc thing. I had forgotten, though, and I remember how underpaid he was, but forgotten how upset he was at the end and how he wanted to be traded, how much he hated Jerry Krause. I forgot all that stuff. And I think The Last Dance kind of jarred that for me. I think there's things in The Last Dance that I felt like they could have gone into more. I don't think today's generation fully understands what it was like for teams back then. to have to break through to get to a championship, because there was no, the free agency movement there was back then was so limited. Guys had stayed with teams often for like a decade. That's why you saw the superstars never move. Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, Magic Johnson, all those guys stayed with the same team. So in order to basically get to the next level, you had to go through the best. And the Bulls had to break through that Detroit Pistons barrier. And when they finally did, and even to this day, I still feel what Michael Jordan felt, which was when they finally beat the Pistons and vanquished the Pistons, I almost remember that more than them beating the Lakers in the finals, which is crazy as it sounds. And you won't get that feeling today because so many players move that you just don't really have those rivalries where you had to go through a team three straight years to get to where you wanted to be. And so to see Scottie Pippen grow through that, because I remember all the times that Scottie Pippen got thrown to the ground and the migraine game and how they just basically toyed around with him, to see him kind of grow through that, you saw him become the person that he was through all those years. And I think you get a little taste of it in The Last Dance. I wish we had kind of seen a little more of that.
Final question, and I'll go away from The Last Dance for just a quick second. So I'll circle back around to the NBA, circle back around to if we're fortunate enough and we get to finish out this this season for the Lakers and the Clippers and everybody, obviously, the entire NBA. What do you think, if I'm talking just about the Lakers, what do you think will be one of their biggest challenges if we get that opportunity to finish off the season? What will be the toughest part for the Lakers to restart again?
I think it'll be ramping everybody's bodies back to where it was. One thing that I think LeBron James said when we were put on pause, basically, I think I saw him say somewhere that he felt that his body was just starting to get to playoff mode. And obviously we saw the Lakers were hitting their stride at that point. They had just beaten Milwaukee. They had beaten the Clippers. And this is going to be the same challenge for the Clippers as well. But getting their bodies back into a playing rhythm, most people say it's going to take 3 weeks to a month. On top of that, I think you're going to have to see some teams really be careful with their superstars because you don't want them to get hurt. I talked to Cody Zeller, I think it was about maybe like 3 weeks ago, and I was asking him if there would be any trepidation from any players coming back who just, you know, were afraid of catching coronavirus. And he said, actually, I worry more about guys getting injured because we've never had to go through this where we shut it down for a couple months and all of a sudden we got to ramp it back up. And for guys that are like the Lakers who have to hit a championship stride, perhaps fairly quickly, we won't know, but it might only be a month before they come back. My biggest worry is that and injuries. That would be my biggest worry, along with perhaps anybody potentially getting sick if we don't have a vaccine.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you doing this, and always appreciate your insight. All right, bud?
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Om Yongmasuk right there. Great stuff. Great stuff. Let's just say the man knows his basketball. When we come back, I did mention I'm going to just kind of roll off this. Biggest challenge once the Lakers get back on the court. If you got some thoughts on this, 877-710-ESPN. I got what I would be concerned about, but you know what? Every team out there is going to have to go through their challenges if we get the NBA back. Plus, I'll play what Dwight said on Friday. I asked him that exact same question, Dwight Howard, on a Zoom call. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.